Welcome to Gabbing Gilmore. I'm Jackie.
And I'm Catherine.
We're sisters, moms, and in our humble opinion, Gilmore Girls experts.
So grab a pipe.
And go call your private investigator.
As we stroll through the most evil paths of Stars Hollow. Before we start, if you love the podcast and you've been listening for a little while, would you take a moment while you're listening to leave us a review on Apple? It helps us reach more Gilmore Girls super fans, and we would truly appreciate it.
All right. Hi, everyone. Hi, Kath.
Hey, Jack.
So today we are talking about the most diabolical moments on Gilmore Girls.
Ooh, yes.
So we're thinking about times when different characters were their most diabolical.
Yeah.
Because everyone can at times be a little cruel, you know, can do something unkind, but there are definitely times when they go over that line into what we are calling diabolical.
Yes.
So we thought we'd talk about what does that mean?
Yeah.
To do something diabolical. And so we, for ourselves, we were thinking this means, you know, something more like cruel mixed with a lack of empathy. Mm. And it really has to come from a place of calculating, cunning, you know, where the character is trying to serve their own needs.
Yeah.
And also really they're kind of hurting someone else.
Yeah.
So almost intentionally, you know, kind of hurting someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are times when, you know, we can think about characters do things that unintentionally hurt someone else.
True.
But this is more of like an intended consequence.
Yes.
And they're really not just simply acting on an emotion.
Yeah.
So an example of that is, say, for example, when Lorelai and Rory devil egg Jess's car.
Right.
So that's like a small example.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of mean.
Yeah.
You know, but in the
but
moment,
it was a little
they're
more
like,
playful mean.
It was. They're like, hey, he's annoying us. We're annoyed by all the things. We're going to mess up his car.
Yeah. And it didn't really hurt his life.
It didn't. No.
You know, it caused him some inconvenience.
It did.
But it didn't ruin anything.
No. And they really didn't plan it. In the moment, they just acted on this emotion.
Yeah. So we're not going as much with spontaneous.
No.
Thinking a little bit more about kind of intentional manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's some bigger offenders on Gilmore than others.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that. And tell us, you know, we're going to go through these, our top 10.
Yeah.
And if there's one that you want to hear more about, certainly we could probably do a full episode on most of these. Tell us.
Yeah.
You know, shoot us a DM and let us know.
Yeah, we'd love to hear that.
One other thing that's important to note is that we decided not to include Rory and Dean and the event that you all like to talk about. We're just not going to do it here today because, well, a couple reasons. One, it's a standalone. Like, we need to just talk about Rory and Dean, the affair, everything that goes along with that.
Right.
And then I think secondly, kind of what you said, they didn't really set out to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
They certainly did hurt someone.
Right.
But they weren't really trying to manipulate here. Right. So feel free to disagree with us.
Yeah,
we know some of you will, but we're going to save that.
Like Catherine said, we put together a top 10 list, but then we each have our own number ones.
We do.
So we love to do that.
So let's get into it.
All right. What do we have? Number 10.
Number 10. Marty pretending he didn't know Rory. Now, I feel like we could argue that he was kind of acting on impulse and out of just like raw emotion.
Mm.
And he might have been a little bit, but I feel like he made a snap decision in the moment to be cunning. And to lie to Lucy to protect his own ego.
Interesting.
And he continued, like, the reason that I want to put Marty as number 10 is because he continued this also.
True.
When it would have been easy, maybe not easy, but he could have come clean to Lucy and said, oh, that was kind of weird earlier. I actually do know Rory from freshman and sophomore year.
Yeah.
And it was a thing, whatever. We're fine now.
Right. They probably could have gotten over that hump had he done that early on.
Yeah.
And in fact, I would say that he probably knew he was going to come across Rory well in advance, because I have to think that Lucy and Olivia kept saying, we're hanging out with this girl, Rory.
For sure.
Now, they didn't say Marty's name because they didn't say guy's name.
They called him boyfriend.
So she had no heads up.
Yes. It was justifiable that Rory wouldn't have known mm-hmm. in advance who he was, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
He had to have heard Lucy and Olivia saying, let's go call Rory yep. and do this and that.
Weren't they gone for the weekend at Rory's house? Wasn't it when they came back from Rory's house that she meets him?
Yes.
So you don't think they said, we're going to Rory's house in Connecticut?
There's no way.
Or whatever, in Stores Hollow. I mean,
Marty had to have had some advance notice.
Yeah. So I wonder what he was thinking when he found out that they were hanging out with Rory. Like, did he start hatching a plan?
Maybe.
Like, what am I going to do when I see her?
Right.
You know, I wonder if he started and decided ahead of time, or was it right in that moment?
He might have.
I don't know.
He seemed a little more prepared for it than she was.
He was very calm.
Oh, Marty, you're evil.
Calculating and cunning. All right. Not the bosom buddies exterior we expected from Marty.
No, Marty, you're not a nice guy.
All right. We can't have a top 10 list of diabolical moments without Paris.
We sure can't.
Number 9, Paris's cruel breakup with Jamie.
Ooh.
Yeah. So with this one, I think what really stood out to me is that when Jamie comes to visit Paris at Yale, mm-hmm. we know that she is already having some kind of a relationship with Asher. And pretty much no one knows about it except for Rory. And we find out that it's Jamie's birthday. And I think that's the part where I feel like, now we've moved into diabolical because
it's like a knife to the heart.
It is, because she probably already somewhat over him and knowing that she wants to move on from him.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think that she really had no intention of seeing him at all that weekend. So to allow him to actually make the trip from Princeton over to Yale.
Right.
Is absolutely cruel.
Just tell him you can't see him.
Yeah. Like,
but it seems like maybe she had been putting it off for a while and she finally acquiesced to him saying, well, it's my birthday. Aren't we going to spend it together? She's probably like, fine, but I'm going to be very busy.
And I think she was hoping that he would pick up on her clues that she was dropping and either not come or get sick of her and break it off with her.
Which is such a guy move, by the way. Treating someone like crap so that they'll break up with you. Paris.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, and I think that Paris wanted to remain the good guy in this story for herself, because she sort of knew like dating Asher was forbidden and almost, I don't want to say wrong, but in the eyes of
a little bit wrong,
you know, the culture of Yale, not a great move. And so I think she just didn't want to admit that she was doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. So then to break up with Jamie makes her even worse of a person.
That's true.
So she was just like gonna ignore it.
Yeah, it seemed like she just didn't want to deal with it, and she just wanted it to go away on its own.
Yeah. But it's also, but I also feel like it was planful, because it was a planned weekend. They, you know, and he was coming, it was his birthday. Like, all of those things bring it to another level.
Yeah, and then she's just sitting there watching C-SPAN.
Yeah, and blaming
Lane. While he's out on campus looking for her.
Yes.
So sad, Jamie.
That was a rough one.
Okay, townies. Number 8. Logan almost letting the maid get fired.
Oh.
Do y'all know what I'm talking about? This is in How Many Crowpogs to Cape Cod. When he visits Emily and Richard Gilmore's house for the first time, they have him over for dinner, and he does a little Life and Death Brigade business, which is bringing a knickknack in his pocket that he stole from another rich person's house and saying that he then swaps it for another knickknack at a different rich person's house. And he's been doing it up and down the Eastern Seaboard for ages. And he thinks this is funny. So then, you know, when Emily notices that the knickknack is gone, she immediately goes after the maid, Beatrice. What do you know about this? She says.
Emily. Can I say I love how quickly Emily notices? It's great.
It is.
And I
funny.
Think like we all expect her to notice that fast, but Logan just doesn't know her well enough yet.
Totally. Like, no. You're not messing with Emily Gilmore here. Watch out. So she blames it on the maid, because of course she blames everything on the help.
Mm-hmm.
And he had several moments there to kind of fess up, or just not even fess up. I think he could have just taken it out of his pocket and put it on the dining room table.
Totally.
How hard was that?
Well, Lorelai was staring at him because she knew.
I know.
But he knew she knew.
He knew she knew. And he sat there kind of frozen.
Uh-huh.
Rory sat there frozen, protecting her boyfriend, protecting her white privileged boyfriend because she didn't want to.
Shame. Yeah. Embarrassment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so here's my thing. Like, this is why I put it in the diabolical category. Some people might say he was just having fun. He didn't really mean for her to get fired, you know, all that kind of stuff. And she didn't get fired. No. Mm. I think it's this symbol of Logan's absolute kind of ignorance to his privilege and his ability to get kicked out of private schools and land on a soft cushion and not realizing or completely ignoring that other people don't have a soft cushion to land on. So if this maid gets fired, what does she have? She might be supporting herself and a couple of dependents.
Yeah.
She might be sending money back to wherever she's from. I don't remember. If she, I don't think like we know that she was an immigrant, but but Emily hired a lot of immigrants.
Yes, she did.
So, so he just, it was like this reckless, willful ignorance to any consequences that would stem from his behavior.
Yeah, he definitely didn't think about other people. He only thought about what he wanted to do. And, you know, that's what we were talking about earlier, where there's just not that thought for the consequences to other people.
Yeah, it makes you wonder how many other kind of service people he stepped on with a smile and without ever looking like a bad guy, but kind of just as this collateral damage from whatever he did. Kind of like how he treated Marty as the bartender of his parties and, you know, thinks that he's being all complimentary of his bartending skills. Meanwhile, his friends are ridiculing Marty and he lets it go.
Yeah.
And still comes off as kind of like the nice guy.
Yeah.
The nice rich guy. But just again, like trampling over people and not really caring.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of like, yeah, wanting to be the good guy in the story and always look good, even when he knows he's not.
Yeah.
He's pretty good at it.
Yes. And this doesn't mean we hate Logan. We don't. But we can see his faults.
He's complex.
All right. Ready for number seven?
All right. Number seven, Francie taking pictures of Rory in the garage and then showing them to Paris.
Oh, Francie.
This was quite a thought out plan.
Especially for a teenager.
Right? What is she? 17, 18 years old?
Yeah.
I really do love Francie, though.
She's
so
amazing.
I'm glad that we get a minute to talk about her.
She's so awesome.
And actually, as I was thinking about this, I sort of wish that she had more airtime and more of a story. Because I think she was a pretty interesting person as we think about like her motivation and desire for power. Because it's very different from Paris's.
Yes,
they're both
it
very
is.
Tough and willful and headstrong
yes.
and want power, but in different ways.
Agreed.
So this is why they're interesting together.
It is. And can I just sidebar? Yeah. I love how they brought her back in a year in the life. It felt like she had never stepped away from the character.
Right.
You know, some people you could kind of tell like, oh, do they remember who they, you know, that they were acting as this character 20 years ago? No, Francie stepped right into it as if she'd never left. And I loved her attitude with Paris, kind of like nonchalant.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I'm going to protect myself. Like, I'm not going to bow down to you. But the whole like, what's your damage?
Yeah. It's like they just fell right back into their high school roles, just like as you do.
All right. But so yeah, let's talk about her scheme.
Because, you know, she was just trying to get more power within the student council, and she knew that Paris had all the power, which made her uncomfortable, and so she decided to go for Rory, who she decided was the weak link.
Yes.
And I think like it's just comical to think about her planning this whole thing where she gets Rory, you know, separate from Paris, gets her in a garage, has someone there to take these photos,
right?
Develops the photos, gets them to Paris, has a backstory.
And
she
honks
has to act.
The car horn in the garage. How does that happen?
That is funny. It's quite an elaborate plan.
Someone's got their daddy's BMW
absolutely
in the garage.
Yeah.
Lem.
So yeah, this one, what is it? Because she wanted the prom in a certain place and wanted like the hemline. No, I'm joking. But you know, we know that she wanted more power.
Absolutely.
And was just trying to figure out how to get to, you know, Paris.
Yeah, she wanted the prom at the Wadsworth.
She did.
Which, by the way, Jackie and I have both been to the Wadsworth Athenaeum.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's a wonderful place if you come to Hartford.
Yes. So yeah, this one had to make the list for me. Because, like I said, Francie and Diabolical and the Puffs go hand in hand.
They do. When it comes to power.
Yeah.
She's right up there with Paris and Emily and Trix.
Yeah. Because actually, when it comes to the Puffs, we heard that she had Paris doing all kinds of stuff for her.
True.
Paris says, like, I was fluffing her pom-poms and doing her homework. I don't.
Yeah.
She alludes to all these type of things just to get into the Puffs.
Yes.
So Francie was like, she wanted to rule the school.
Mm-hmm.
But we know Paris did in a way, too. But I feel like hers was more like academically and student council-wise and those type of things.
Yes.
Very different.
Yeah. And because if we go back to our Enneagram podcast that we did about Paris, it was because I think she believed she was the best person for the job.
Right.
And that no one else could run the school the way she could. Not just that she wanted power.
That's true.
It was like, I'm the most capable.
Yeah, that's
obviously
true.
Put me in the role.
Francie was like, I just want this.
Yeah.
This is fun.
I just want a fun prom.
Yeah.
Okay, number six. Strobe's existence. Okay, like, I'm kidding, but I'm not kidding.
I love this.
He has got to be the worst character on the show.
The
Am I wrong?
Worst. Oh, we're bringing back Park.
He's the worst. The worst person in the world. If you don't know John Ralphio, oh my gosh, Andy and I say that to each other.
That's
all
like the
time.
Best line ever.
People, go look up John Ralphio on YouTube and just have some laughs.
Yeah.
He's the best character. Anyway, okay, Strobe is the worst. And when they had that dinner at the Gilmore house, Christopher comes to town in season one. Lorelai and Rory haven't seen him in a while. Rory has never met her paternal grandparents, at least not since she was a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that they don't talk about enough on the show.
Yeah, agree.
Like, Rory eventually is going to need some therapy to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not just that I had kind of a crappy dad who wasn't around enough, because at least, like, he kind of tried.
Right.
Strobe and Francine did not try at all.
Right. Because they were the ones responsible for Christopher at the time that Rory was born.
Yeah.
Christopher was 16 or 17.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he needed guidance from his parents. Clearly, their message was, you don't need to be involved.
You don't need to be involved.
This is
and
a big
in fact,
mistake.
The things that Strobe said at the dinner were so disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, I don't care how good a student that girl is, meaning Rory.
Yeah.
It's a humiliation. He used that word. And then he says to Lorelai, you seduced him into ruining his life. She had that baby and she ended his future.
Yeah. No,
it was.
It's a humiliation.
Really just. Right?
Like, it was almost like calling Rory it.
I know.
I know he's saying the situation, but in a way, it's like.
Yeah, like she's an object.
Gross. Yeah.
I think it was disgusting that he and Francine agreed to come to this dinner. If they knew how they felt about this.
Right. So back
you
to our
definition. You say no to the invitation.
Yes.
If you have that many problems with it.
Well, was this their goal? To come and finally get to express all of their feelings
exactly.
that they've been holding in.
Yep. I think Strobe wanted the chance to cut down Lorelai.
Yeah. I think
because
so
he
too.
Hadn't been able to do that.
Yep.
And he wanted someone to blame Christopher's entire adult life on.
Yep.
Because we know that Christopher is kind of fumbling from job to job, or not even job to job, you know, like trying to start businesses and stuff like that and not really succeeding. And for Strobe, it's easy to blame it on a woman
of
who,
course.
Quote, entrapped him.
Yeah.
Like, are we kidding?
He won't even let Lorelai speak with pride about her job.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't give her an inch.
Right. He's like, maybe you wouldn't have had a blue collar job if you hadn't derailed your own life.
What does he want her like groveling
on the
floor?
Like,
what does he want?
She's like, I have a life.
Yeah.
I have a good life that I'm happy with.
Yep. And he doesn't like
and
that.
And all he wanted to do was come and shame her.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it feels so good when Richard starts yelling at him.
It really does.
It's like the Emily moment when she tells Christopher to go in later seasons.
Oh, yeah. When she tells off Shira Huntsberger.
Yes, yes. For me, this moment is just as strong. Yeah. Because I really do want to hit Strobe as well. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, someone.
I know. I love when
there.
He kind of like grabs
he
him.
He does. It's very satisfying. Richard's so big. And Strobe says something like, "You're spilling my drink." Like, dude, come on. Get out of here.
Right? You know you're just going to instruct your wife to take it to the dry cleaners later anyway. So what do you care? You're spilling my drink.
Like, that's the worst thing that's happening right now.
So the moral of the story is Strobe sucks.
I dislike Strobe more than I dislike Tobin. I just realized that.
Oh, for sure.
Well, he's actually a terrible person. Dick. Yeah. He's not just annoying.
Number 5, Tristan DeGray and the PJ Harvey tickets. Ugh. Jackie, you know my feelings about Tristan. We haven't talked about him all that much. Mm-hmm. A little bit.
In the Bad Boy episode. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But here we go. He bought the tickets for PJ Harvey, assuming Rory would go with him. He has no evidence that Rory would want to go to this concert with him. I mean, except for the fact, yes, they had shared that kiss at Madeline's party, but she made it very clear the next day that that was a mistake.
And then
she goes on to fix him up with Paris. So that's a pretty clear indication that she doesn't want to date him.
Yeah, good point.
And so she says no to the concert. Then he goes and tells Paris, Madeline, and Louise that she was going with him.
I hate that.
Knowing full well that she wasn't.
Yeah.
She had just said no. And they're like, who are you going with?
Yeah.
Rory?
I know.
That was disgusting.
It is.
And it seemed to me that he was stirring up trouble because he knew how fragile Rory and Paris's relationship was because of that whole fix-up thing.
Yeah.
When Paris got really mad, you know, that Rory was behind the fix-up, the date. So I think he knew he was stirring up trouble. And he knew Rory didn't have a lot of friends at Chilton. Yep. So that was a dickhead move, in my opinion.
Yep.
So, and then he gets pissed at her when she won't go with him. He comes back to her later that day and he's like, I'm getting a little tired of this game. Yeah. Are you meeting me there tonight or what? And she's like, I told you I'm not going.
She couldn't have been more clear.
Yeah. And then he says, I'm starting to get a little irritated about this whole thing.
I'm sure you are.
You know, these tickets cost me a fortune.
Yeah.
And she's like, you've been blabbing this around the school that I'm going with you even when I'm not. And he says, well, the damage is already done, so just come. No.
Wow.
And then steals her books.
Okay. Wow, he's really grasping.
Why don't they just like put a flag up that says like boys will be boys?
Yeah, seriously.
You know?
So do you think that he thought in advance, like, okay, if I present these tickets, she's kind of likely to say no. What am I going to do? Do you think he thought about that and that he would tell Paris?
No, he thought, I'm good looking and I will get her to go with me because girls don't say no to me. Mm. And at least I put in a little bit of research to find out like what kind of singer or band she would like.
Yeah.
Because if he was like, want to go to Hanson, that wouldn't have worked.
So when Paris and Madeline and Louise say, oh, who are you going with? Do you think, like, what was his motivation in saying Rory? Did he assume that he was going to wear her down, do you think?
Yes, he assumed he was going to wear her down, and he wanted to stir up trouble again between Rory and Paris.
Because I wonder if he's thinking, in the off chance this doesn't go my way, then I can make a little trouble for her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
Now they're going to be mad at her. Oh, well. Like, in his head, you know? Like,
exactly. It was manipulative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he even said, I'll give your books back when you agree to go with me. Ew.
So, that's
really
ridiculous. That's very childish.
What, are you 10 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's almost, like, sad.
He was, and it makes me wonder what he was going to say to girls when he got to college.
Ooh. Uh-oh.
Here, have this beer if you XYZ. Like, ew.
Yeah. No. I can't drive you home until you do that. Ew.
No. If you're shipping Tristan and Rory, we need to talk. I have a lot to say.
That's going to be a full episode.
Yeah. Yes,
we'll
it will.
It. All right, number four is Floyd, Jason's dad, getting himself
Floyd
and his wife invited over to the Gilmore's house and then announcing that he's suing Richard and Jason.
Yikes.
This one is super diabolical.
So diabolical.
Like, he really plans to start to finish because it starts on the golf course. So this is like days before.
Oh, yeah. This is like a mastermind.
It really
scheme.
Is because if you think about it, so not only does it start on the golf course, Floyd also has hired a private investigator to follow Jason. So he is collecting all his information. So he knows everything that Jason's been doing. Then he approaches Richard and Jason, gets himself invited over, and like blames it on the wives, though. He says, oh, they miss each other. We should get them together. Oh, maybe we could just come along if they don't mind.
Right?
And Richard's like, oh, yeah, sounds good.
There was a lot of forethought in that plan.
Mm-hmm. They come over, and I think, I can't remember the wife's name. I think
me neither, but I know what you're going to say.
She knew.
She absolutely did.
I think
did.
He had her in on it.
She absolutely
she
did.
Because she makes faces that indicate that she was aware of what was going on.
Yeah, because at the end, mm-hmm. when she hears the commotion, yep. she's like, I better get my coat.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Whoa, girl, what?
Yep. And Emily's confused.
You knew what was happening?
Yep.
So that means she knew mm-hmm. that her husband was trying to take down her son.
Yes.
Okay.
Right?
What is your problem?
Seriously, like, diabolical.
Like, not to blame it on her, because, like, it wasn't her plan.
No, I'm like, part of both. Yeah.
Yeah, she's mm-hmm. like an accessory.
Yeah. It's sort of like a Strobe and Francine type
it
of
is.
Situation. It's like, ooh, you it guys is. Are real yucky here.
Yeah.
And I think, like, Floyd also, the other kind of scary part about it is he's very kind and courteous. Yeah. I mean, not over the top. He's himself.
Right, but he has, like, that smooth, like,
yeah.
kind of slow
like,
voice.
Tell me your story. Great story. You know, yeah. oh, Richard, you're always one of the good ones. Whatever. He's, like, buttering him up.
Yeah, he was waiting for the right moment.
And then he just strikes. Yeah. Like a snake. Yeah.
Creepy,
and like you said, that his son is involved, he just clearly doesn't care. And actually almost that makes it a little more enticing to him because Jason left his business
yeah.
and went with Richard.
It so feels more personal.
Pissed. Yeah.
Would mm-hmm. he have done this to another colleague?
Right. Or just let them kind of
yeah.
peter
probably
out.
Just let it go.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Another man we love to hate, Mitchum Huntsberger.
Mitchum.
Kind of in the same category with Floyd and Strobe, but we get a little bit more of Mitchum.
Yeah.
Mitchum offering Rory the internship and then crushing her. And I know
yes.
that this one is a little bit controversial. I think some people don't agree that he did this intentionally to crush Rory. I will die on the hill that he did it, that he offered her the internship specifically to crush her.
Really?
Yes, I do.
It's a tough one.
I know.
It's a tough one.
I think no matter what she did.
Tell us why you
internship,
think so. Yeah.
He was going to somehow crush her hopes and dreams. And it's Lorelai who says, do you really think he had good intentions in this internship when his whole right. family is looking at Rory like Anna Nicole, but
right.
he thinks she's swell and wants to give her an internship?
Yes.
It doesn't add up.
Yeah.
I mean, Mitchum is just as invested in Logan having the path that's set out for him as anyone else, if not more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make sense that he would offer Rory an internship, which would further her career when they don't
yeah.
want Logan with a career woman.
Right.
Unless it was to actually divide them. Like, if he thought this would give Rory a leg up in her career and then, like, somehow send her away and would divide them as a
right.
couple.
That was kind of what I thought. Like, this is how I imagine the conversation going behind the scenes with Shira and Mitchum. Mitchum saying, you know what? Why don't I just see whether this girl really has any potential or not before we get all worked up about her being a career woman? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not even for her. Mm-hmm. Let's test the waters. See mm-hmm. if this kid has anything.
I think he would so say then, that to Shira.
Right.
While thinking.
Maybe.
I'm going to get rid of
maybe.
Her.
Maybe if she was like this standout, amazing intern,
yeah,
he would have sent her to the Washington Post because
right.
he knows people, and he'd be like, you know what, this is a good way to split them up.
Totally.
As you said, I'm going to kind of get them away from each other.
Yeah. So either way, there were options.
Yeah. Or if she's not that great, I can crush her. Mm-hmm. And then Logan will have a stay at home wife.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Either way. Yeah. He wins. And because I think that when he offers it, he finds Rory at the Yale Daily News and offers the internship to her. And that whole conversation is very manipulative.
Oh,
you know,
totally.
Because he's this experienced guy in the business, in the newspaper world, and he knows that he's powerful, mm-hmm. and he knows that she knows he's powerful, mm-hmm. and she actually says no,
yeah.
which is like pretty gutsy.
Pretty gutsy.
And you know, we've talked about how hard it is to go on your intuition as a young woman, and it's pretty impressive
totally.
That she kind of maybe sees something there and declines.
Yeah,
and he won't let it go, but he's like smooth about it.
Oh, very smooth. He's like doing the Socratic method mm-hmm. with her, you know, yeah. like just say,
tell me why.
Just say I did have yeah. ulterior motives. Right. Like, why not take the opportunity? Mm-hmm. An opportunity is presenting itself to you.
And
why not snatch
not
it up?
Wrong.
He's not wrong. And that's not Rory's main inclination
yep.
to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But
she almost needed to hear that. But I just didn't want it to come from him.
He does have so many motives.
He really does.
Besides her well-being.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, number two. We know this is a big one for many of you. Emily trying to break up Lorelai and Luke by using Chris
yeah.
as a puppet.
Chris the pawn.
the puppet. So you probably remember this is right before the vow renewal of Emily and Richard. And yeah. she's trying on dresses upstairs with Miss Celine, which of course is so fun. Alex Borstein popping up again. And she sees the look on Lorelai's face when she's holding a gown up to herself, mm-hmm. you know, and she says like, oh, Lorelai, don't you think you'll ever want to get married? She just kind of says it offhand.
Yeah. She's like feeling good.
Not really paying attention.
Yeah.
yeah. It wasn't really like a manipulative,
no.
controlling Emily statement.
Yeah.
It was really kind of in the moment, as
yes.
you said. Yeah. Like, I'm feeling romantic and happy.
Yeah.
And then Lorelai's like, well, you know, I don't know.
Maybe.
And all of a sudden, it's like this dark cloud passes Emily's face.
Yep.
It's like everything becomes crystal clear.
Yep.
And it's like it takes her 2.2 seconds to hatch this devious plan.
No, seriously.
Am I wrong?
No, I agree.
She sees the look on Lorelai's face and she's like, oh my gosh, she wants to marry this man. And Luke is completely unsuitable for my daughter.
Yeah.
I know what to do.
Next day.
So she shows up at Chris's place, which, by the way, I think he's still living in Boston.
Seriously.
At this point. You know, we know, I think we've talked about this before, that
yeah.
they kind of like move him down to Connecticut eventually without ever saying
His
it.
His apartment just floats
yes.
from Boston somewhere in Connecticut.
His car registration just automatically transfers from Massachusetts to Connecticut.
So nice.
So easy. But really, so she goes there all the way to Boston, gives Chris this speech about his timing being bad, that she's never really thought of him that well.
I love everything she says in that conversation.
His reaction
like,
is
wow,
so funny.
Thanks for coming here and telling me that.
Right?
So funny.
Is Gigi sitting on the floor
yeah.
watching Teletubbies?
Yeah.
So funny.
What did she say? Is this the child?
Is this
the,
yeah. Yeah.
Hilarious.
Hilarious. So her theory here is that, you know, Luke is not only uneducated mm-hmm. and all that stuff, but that he's going to hold Lorelai back. It's
yeah.
interesting here because it feels like she sees Lorelai's potential kind of like as a career woman almost.
Mm.
Like, what is he going to hold her back from?
Yeah.
Not from like being a debutante woman. Like, she's
know,
not
right?
going to join the DAR. I think she actually sees Lorelai's potential here in her career, which just it gives me like a tiny little tiny little thing of sympathy for Emily.
That's a nice way to look at it, because I always just assumed that for her it was you're either wealthy or you're not, and wealth equals better. Like,
oh,
you're a better
yeah.
person if you're wealthy.
I mean, for sure that's there too.
But I like the way that you put it.
Yeah, it's teeny tiny. I think it's a sliver. And then she just tosses the invitation on his coffee table.
Yeah.
And pieces out.
That's true.
And then, you know, as we know,
yeah.
Chris plays right into her hands, does exactly what she wanted him to do. This is one of the most well thought out, cunning plans on the entire show,
yeah.
in my opinion.
Yeah, I would say it is.
I bet a lot of people would put this as number one.
Yeah. She even travels for this one.
She does.
She makes a special trip.
Do you think she drove herself or someone chauffeured her?
I think she drove herself. She was that determined. She got in her car.
Goes against everything Trick says.
Yeah, that's
women
right.
Women should not drive.
But yeah, and you know, and she really faces the consequences for this one. That's how diabolical it was.
Yeah.
The backfire is like just as intense.
Totally.
And, you know, well deserved, honestly.
Yeah, you and me, we're done.
Yeah.
Love that line. All right, so we have a few runners up we want to list before we get to number one. And these might be some of your favorites, so tell us later.
All right, so Kirk opening the diner in the square right after he crashed a car into Luke's diner, which effectively closed it down.
Oh, Kirk.
Thereby benefiting.
Not cool.
Mm-mm. Mean.
Then we've got Jackson not telling Suki that he failed to get the vasectomy.
Oh. Yeah.
Mm-mm. Thereby getting her pregnant.
Right.
Whoops.
Yeah, we added Chris convincing Lorelai to get married in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
We could probably talk about that one for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
Also, let's make a baby.
Yeah. Okay. How about Trick's offering to pay for Chilton?
It was pretty evil.
Mm.
Also, the cigar humidor.
Yes. Lots of Trick's things.
Rory agreeing to go to the party with Robert, even though she had absolutely no interest in him. You know, we don't really have Rory and Lorelai
That's
on this
funny.
List.
No, we don't.
So I thought this is probably, you know, like one of the worst things.
I can see. Yeah, I can see that. Emily threatening to donate Lorelai's beloved dollhouse.
Oof. Awful. Yeah. And another runner up, Trix's letter to Richard the night before his wedding. Asking him to essentially leave Emily at the altar.
Mm.
And then keeping a carbon copy in the basement.
The carbon copy is what seals it.
It does.
All right, let's get to our number ones.
All right, here we go. My number one is the second half of the Floyd story that you shared with us. So for me, it's Richard turning on Jason and going back to Floyd's company.
Okay.
Now, one could argue Floyd was more diabolical than Richard because of what we just discussed. Mm. His plan was like so well thought out and happened over the course of days. But I think as Gilmore Girls fans, we expect a little bit more from Richard.
Mm.
We want to, we know he's a little bit ruthless at work.
Yeah.
But ultimately, we want to believe that he has a heart, that the softness that he shows toward Rory is part of his actual personality and that he wouldn't do something quite so mean.
Mm,
so for me, this is worse than Floyd because we want to believe in Richard.
Right. Okay.
And he spent so much time hating Floyd, hating the company that was screwing him over. And he was so proud of building something on his own.
He was
building this company. And he was skeptical when Jason wanted to join.
Mm-hmm.
It took a while to build that trust,
yeah.
But they did. They seemed to work really well together and have a good thing going.
They did.
And I think Richard was very proud of creating something on his own. Mm. I loved that journey for him.
I know, as
the people would say.
Yeah.
And so to me, this was just so evil for him to go back to the company. Now, I know finances were caught up in this.
Mm.
He had put his retirement up for collateral.
I don't know if he
took a second mortgage out or something.
Do you think he had no choice?
Well, financial, there's always a choice, right? But like if he wanted to preserve the wealth of his family,
right,
then he needed to do what he did.
Like, did he put his family in jeopardy?
Right. Like, whose fault is it that he put his retirement up for collateral?
Mm-hmm.
That's his own business decision.
Right.
And while, yes, you can call this a business decision as well,
right,
it just seems so heartless to go back to this company that was awful to him and leave Jason with nothing.
Yeah.
And leave him without any business.
Yeah, the way he did it.
And I think a little bit of it, some people might think, okay, was this partly due to his resentment that Jason had a relationship with his daughter and didn't tell him about it? you know, and like maybe a little bit. But, you know, remember right after the debacle, they go back to Richard's office and Richard and Jason talk for a little bit.
Yeah.
And they seem to speak really honestly to each other. They're like, let's just get it out onto the table. Jason's like, I'm promising to fix this. And Richard feels like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, how long have you been dating my daughter? They put it all out.
Right.
And they seem to get past it. And then.
I know.
That's it.
Well, that's why I
wondered.
Then
he turns on him.
Is Richard faking that moment with
Jason? I don't
think
he was.
Yeah.
I don't think he was. I think Richard believed what he was saying in the moment. Mm-hmm. But then didn't sleep that night thinking about all the possibilities.
But what's
and what he needed to do
after that conversation with Jason, then he goes out on the balcony or wherever with Emily and says, it's all going to be all right in a very kind of calculating way that makes me wonder if he was already hatching a plan. Like, I'm
probably
done with Jason.
Maybe.
And I also wondered if he saw this as a choice between his family and Jason. And how long had he been working with Jason? I don't know.
Right.
But maybe he thought,
less than a year.
I don't have loyalty to this kid.
I know.
Like, yeah, he's been good to me, but in given this choice,
yeah,
I'm choosing my family, and I'm not gonna feel bad about it.
Yeah, yeah, and his wealth. I think it's important to say that he's choosing
the
his
two
family
are one.
And his wealth. Yeah,
I think family and wealth are one.
Yeah, for him. Yeah,
yeah, they don't tease that out at all. So, yeah,
that's true. There was just this sentence he said to him: "You've got my trust." Go get him.
Oh, that's
Richard
sad.
Says that to Jason
right before Jason leaves.
Yep.
Oh, that is sad. So it makes you it makes me wonder.
I know.
I have to really analyze that.
Yeah.
Like, when did Richard make the decision?
Yeah. My theory is he stayed up for, you know, the whole night, thought about it a couple days and realized probably by the next day.
It had to be fast.
I only have one option here.
It had to be fast. Yeah. All right.
And Jackie, what's your
number one? Is Logan at dinner, the Indian restaurant, with Lucy, Marty, and Rory.
Ooh.
So this is this is season 7 Logan.
Yes.
So, you know, season 7 Logan is a little bit different. We've talked about that here and there where, you know, he's more of like the good guy.
Yeah, we generally like season 7 Logan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is why this is interesting for him. He's been like the good boyfriend. He's at work. He's trying hard in business. He's still making mistakes. He's still running off to Vegas here, but he's trying.
He is.
And
he's showing up at the hospital.
Yes.
Yep.
And then, so here he's back at Yale. He's visiting Rory. And this is when Marty is still pretending not to know Rory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so now.
And Rory confesses all this to him ahead of time.
He
she tells
know
him
this,
so that he's prepared.
And, you know, Logan and Marty have that kind of rocky relationship where I think like they're both a little bit envious of each other. Both of them.
Yeah. Good point. Good point.
And so now they're at dinner and, you know, like Marty just goads him. He does. Like they're kind of going back and forth a little bit about Marty's jobs. And I think that Logan is feeling a little envious that Rory's clearly been hanging out with him again.
Yeah.
But then Marty has to say, well, hey, I'm just waiting for that trust fund to kick in.
Ooh.
And it's like, Marty, dude, come
it was
on.
Like Logan was holding back.
He was.
Until that
like
moment.
He was going to let it go. And then when Marty says that, and you just see Logan's face, he just sits there for a moment. You guys have to go and watch this.
Oh, totally.
Because it's the best.
Totally.
He just sits there staring, and you see him coming up with this plan of figuring out how he's going to catch Marty without actually saying it himself.
Yes.
It is like genius diabolical.
It
like
is. You can see the gears turning.
Yeah. And he does it. It works.
It does.
Logan, he has that streak to him, just like his father. And it was actually
Think he knows how to play people.
He absolutely knows how to play people. He could see how the conversation was going to go. And it was actually when I was watching this scene in the last, I don't know, like few months that made me think about this for characters. You know, when were people diabolical? Because I mean, I've seen this so many times and I'm watching it recently and going, oh my gosh, like that was next level.
Yeah,
and,
it was.
You know, we started talking about how the characters all had these moments that, you know, were just next level. Although we were noticing in our list here that a lot of these are more of the wealthy and privileged.
They are. Mm. We don't see the townspeople doing as many evil, satanic things.
No.
No.
We kind of mentioned Kirk, but it wasn't that.
Yeah, and like Taylor has his moments. Yeah. We covered him a couple episodes ago, but he's not, Taylor's never really like trying to hurt an individual people. Or like manipulate. I mean, he just like, he just wants to do what he wants for the safety of the town. Yeah. So what do you all think about this? We want to know, what do you think was the most diabolical moment? Did we leave one out that sticks out in your mind, or is one of our top 10 your number one?
Yeah. If you want to hear more about one, let us know.
All right. Before we wrap up, let's get Totsied. Ready, Jack? Do you want to go first? How did Gilmore show up in your... How did Gilmore show up for you this week?
Well, you know, I heard that the creator of Pop-Tarts, whose name is William Post, just passed away.
Oh.
I know. And at the age of 96.
Wow.
Yeah, my aunt shared this with me. She is also a Gilmore fan and knows how much we love Gilmore Girls. And she knows about the connection of Gilmore Girls and Pop-Tarts.
And Pop-Tarts. Oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I read the article in the New York Times about him, and it sounded like he had like a pretty good life, you know, and he actually used his kids to taste test the Pop-Tarts. And
that's so cute.
Yeah. And lived his career working, whether it was for Kellogg's or, you know, Post or whoever, it kind of switched. But yeah, it sounded like a pretty good life. And people love Pop-Tarts to this day. I mean, those aren't going anywhere.
No, they're not.
Yeah. So thank you, William Post. Aww. Gilmore Girls appreciates you.
Question. Well, would you ever try to make a homemade Pop-Tart?
Oh, my gosh. I have seen recipes for those.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
I know.
Maybe we should try it and report back.
Yeah, yeah. All right, how about you, Kel?
Yeah, so Valentine's Day was a couple weeks ago, and my kid came home with all this stuff. A lot of tchotchkes, Jack. A lot of tchotchkes that are exchanged in the elementary years, okay? Yeah. So she's working on one, and she's like, Mom, can you help me fold this? And I was doing something. I was like, no, not right now. And I just kind of, I feel bad. I kind of, whatever. And then she's working on it again later. I don't know what it is.
Okay.
And she comes back after it's finished. And she's like, Mom. And she kind of shoves it in my face. And it's a cootie catcher.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, oh, yay. And I don't, we called it something else when we were kids.
A dream catcher? No, something else.
Yeah. I don't even know if we had a name
Maybe
for it.
Maybe we didn't.
But obviously that's what Lorelai and Suki call it when they make it that day when they're at that in presentation.
Yeah. Oh, that is so fun. Yeah. So that was something that someone gave her, like a way to make that?
Yes. It was like they gave her the paper and then she had to fold it the right way. And I was like, oh, if I knew this is what you were doing, I would have helped.
Be more specific next time in your request.
I knew you had something cool to work on.
I love that.
Just kidding.
All right, you guys, thanks for joining us this week. We would love it if you would join us over on Instagram at Gab and Gilmore. That's 2 G's in the middle. And be sure to hit follow in the upper right-hand corner of your app so that you never miss an episode.
Gab and Gilmore is produced with support from Studio 20 South. Cover art by MGI Studios. See you next time. Kaboom!